Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke.
So tell me, what's your chat? What you've been up to? It's been a couple of weeks since we've spoken.
Yeah, it feels like ages because we had a week off. I've had a really nice couple of weeks, actually. Obviously, I had some time off work and I sort of avoided kind of my usual sort of heavy material. So I've actually only been listening to one podcast this whole time since we last spoke, and it's Let's Not Meet, because I just love it. I just love it. And originally I was only listening to it at night time before I went to bed, because I really like, you know, you said you read them at that time of night and you like it. And I agree, I like that too. It's almost like a scary story before bed. But I found myself wanting to listen to it during the day as well. That's what I've been listening to. However, I have got into a couple of series, both very, very good. So we've actually got three series on the go at the moment, which is unheard of for us, because I'm normally so picky with series that it takes a lot to kind of hook me in. So you knew that we were watching The Fall with Gillian Anderson. We're still on that. I think we're on the third series. Really good, really enjoying that. But we've started two new ones. I don't know if you know, but I'm a big fan of Stephen King. Depends what the subject matter is. I don't like his sci-fi stuff, but I do like a lot of his stuff, a lot of his books and things. So it's actually, they're both Stephen King. So one is called Castle Rock, and it's kind of, it seems like it's going to have reference to other Stephen King stories. I know that he does that in the Dark Tower series. I haven't read it because Sean says it wouldn't be my thing, but it's based at Shawshank Prison.
Ooh,
which is obviously, you know, from the Shawshank Redemption, but it's interesting. It's very Stephen King, but it's good. It's really interesting. The other one that I'm watching is called The Outsider. As I say, it's also Stephen King. That one, so I think Castle Rock is on Hulu and The Outsider is on HBO. So it's a bit, the HBO one, The Outsider, it's a bit higher budget. It's Jason Bateman. And it's Stephen, I think Stephen King is also the producer.
I have a feeling that you've seen The Outsider. Yes, so The Outsider, we have seen that and I loved it. We were totally obsessed. It's so interesting and it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like them.
Really enjoying it. So we've kind of been chopping and changing between the three of them. But I said that to Sean, I was like, I can't believe we've got three good series on the go at once. It's unheard of. But yeah, really enjoying all three of them.
So we've been watching I'll Be Gone in the Dark, but it's like the documentary version of it. So you know Michelle McNamara, who wrote I'll Be Gone in the Dark?
Yeah. Yes.
And her husband, Patton Oswalt. So there's a pretty high budget documentary that's been made that's going over her book, and it's got recordings of her from her podcast. There's excerpts from her blog that she had, people that she met when she was looking into the Golden State Killer, or I think it was originally she was just Erons, and then she, I think she actually gave him the moniker the Golden
State Killer. She did.
She did. So she was looking into it. So I think we're 3 episodes in, and it's just amazing because you get to hear from different people in her life and talking about how obsessed she was with finding this out. And you know, she would seclude herself for hours and hours at a time, and he would just leave her to process through everything. And yeah, it's really, really interesting.
That is interesting, actually. I would definitely be up for checking that out, because I've never read her book, but I've heard so much about it, obviously, because of, you know, with the Golden State Killer being caught and stuff, and Joseph D'Angelo. And it's totally on my list to read. So I would absolutely check out the documentary.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So tell me about your case. What have you got for me this week?
Well, we had a lovely review the other day, and it was someone saying that they really enjoyed historical cases. And I haven't done a historical case yet. You've done historical cases.
Yes, I do enjoy a historical case, so I am well up for this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've read a book about this person, Dr. Thomas Neil Cream, a.k.a. the Lambeth Poisoner. He was born in Glasgow in Scotland in 1850. He was the oldest of 8 children, and 4 years after he was born, his family immigrated to Quebec. And that's where his father, who was called William, he became manager of a shipbuilding lumber firm near Quebec City. He briefly thought he was going to go into the shipbuilding trade, start helping his father out, but he didn't end up wanting to do it. And his dad had kind of encouraged him to go into the medical industry. So he went to McGill University in Montreal. He graduated in 1876 as a doctor with honours. And his thesis topic was surrounding chloroform, which is interesting,
okay,
given some of the things that he went on to do. Also interesting is that the address given to his graduating class, you know, when you graduate, it's usually the dean of the university will give a big lecture, and it's all about how to live your life and how to go out into the world and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
It was titled The Evils of Malpractice in the Medical Profession, which is just amazing. Soon after he graduated, he met a young woman called Flora Elizabeth Brooks, whose father was quite a prominent hotelier, and they had a bit of a fling. She became pregnant, and he took it upon himself to perform an abortion on her. She nearly died as a result of it. He essentially performed the abortion and sent her back to her home to kind of have a bit of bed rest, but she was freely bleeding, and her father had to call in a doctor. The doctor discovered what happened, and her father turned up at, I believe it was a hotel that he was having drinks in, wielding a shotgun, and insisted that he married her.
Wow.
So quite the reaction, but to be fair, he did impregnate, then perform an abortion, then nearly kill his daughter.
Yeah.
So not unwarranted, I would argue. They got married on September the 11th, 1876. And Dr. Cream, being a good, upstanding, all-round guy, promptly ran away to England the next day.
What?
He just boarded a boat to England the next day.
Okay.
So he registered as a graduate student at St. Thomas's Hospital in London, He also obtained a qualification from the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons at Edinburgh. So I'm guessing that's Surgeons College in Edinburgh, if anyone's familiar with it.
Must be.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that he was a bit of a playboy. He was always out drinking, lurking about. He took a bit longer than expected to complete his studies. He was just not taking it seriously at all. He finally managed to get all his qualifications and he decided to return to Canada in May of 1878. While he'd been away, Flora, his wife, had contracted bronchitis and died of what appeared to be consumption. Right. But her doctor later suspected cream of foul play because he found out that he'd sent medicine to her. So they initially thought that's what she died of, but her doctor later said, actually, I know that he had sent her some medicine. I don't know when exactly the doctor came out with this. It could have been after it was found out that he'd done some other questionable things. It also transpired that when she passed away, Dr. Cream got in contact with Flora's father and tried to essentially extort some money. I think he believed he was due about $1,000 and they eventually settled on roughly $200. But yeah, that was his sole point of contact after marrying her, then running away. When he found out she died, he tried to get some money.
What was his grounds for asking for money?
His grounds for asking for money was that they were married, so he knew that she was quite wealthy and her father was quite wealthy, and he literally was just trying to extort money from him. So he had to
sign... What a great guy!
Yeah. He had to sign some sort of waiver to say that he wouldn't ask for any more money from the family, and they paid him, I think it was a couple of $100, which would have been a lot of money at that time, just to get him to presumably leave them alone.
Yeah.
So it was 1878, he's back in Canada and he's in London, Ontario. He set up a medical practice which offered illegal abortions.
Lovely.
Yep. Everything seemed to be going swimmingly. He was making loads of money. He was living the high life. He seems to have been the kind of guy that only wore tailored suits and, you know, he was always out and about and he was kind of the man about town and he had this kind of persona. If you look at pictures of him, he was quite a handsome man and quite well cut. He looks a bit like a distinguished gentleman. So people took to him quite well. However, he had this penchant for the darker side of life. He kind of always migrated towards
the macabre.
The macabre. And just not being a good person, generally, he just, any choice that he makes throughout his life, he makes the wrong choice, as you'll come to see. So yeah, he thought, what better way to put his great medical skills to use than to become an illegal abortionist? But there was a woman that worked with him, an African-American midwife named Hattie Mack. So she used to
help love the name.
Him. I know, great name. So she used to help him perform some of these abortions, and there was a young chambermaid who it was rumoured may have had relations with him. There seems to be a lot of women that may have had relations with him. So you can only put so much stock in it. I'm not entirely sure, but she definitely went to him to get an abortion. And she was found dead at his office, just outside his office, in an outhouse with a bottle of chloroform next to her. Mac, being an African-American woman, was the one that was arrested.
Of course she was.
Yeah. And she quickly turned on Cream. She said, yep, he's an abortionist. He has performed as many as 15 abortions with me from that house. And he had told her that he performed over 500 in total. First of all, there's Kate Gardner, who's found with a bottle of chloroform dead
next to
outside.
Her.
And essentially, the police said that she couldn't have done it herself, but we can't prove who did it. We know that she went to have an abortion. Maybe she stole the chloroform. Maybe someone did it to her. We don't know. We can't prove it. This was the first time that he'd really had anything like that happen, so it would have been unheard of at that point for him to have had any kind of rumours around that. He had performed an abortion on another person who was called Mary Ann Faulkner, I believe. This Mary Ann Faulkner was found in Catty Mack's apartment. She moved out hastily. Mary Ann Faulkner's found in her apartment. He had essentially performed an illegal abortion on this woman, and then it didn't go successfully. She was put in that apartment to kind of recuperate, get better if possible, but it didn't happen. She passed away and her decomposing body was found there. Because it's so long ago, I don't know the exact details of who found her, what exactly happened. But when Mac had been arrested and she turned on cream, she told them that he had forced her to take Faulkner, when she was essentially dying, into her apartment.
Into her home, yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Cream said that Mac had come to him for help because she had tried to do the abortion by herself, and he tried to save the poor girl's life and it didn't work. They were both tried for murder, and the jury was unwilling to take the word of a black woman against this handsome young doctor.
Doctor, of course they were.
So he was acquitted.
I wonder if he hired her deliberately.
He did have several midwives, but I don't know their ethnicity or any other details. That's just the one that unfortunately got caught up in an actual legal battle. And then she just kind of vanishes from the scene. There's no more information about, I'm guessing she would have actually gone to jail for it. So then in December 1880, there was another of his patients called Ellen Stack. She died after taking medicine prescribed by him. What he was actually doing at this point was he was using strychnine, which is a poison, in very small doses to induce abortions. He was kind of treating it like a morning after pill.
Right.
And he'd gotten the dosage wrong and she died. Now, strychnine can cause a horrendous death.
Yes. Yeah. I'm an Agatha Christie fan, so you know, I've heard of strychnine.
Yeah.
It features heavily in her books.
Okay, well, it's his favourite. Alan Stack took the medication prescribed by Dr. Cream in order to use it as a morning after pill and passed away. The next month, Dr. Cream attempted to blackmail the pharmacist who had made up her prescription, and he was sending the innocent man threatening letters saying, you're going to get done for her death because you did not make up the prescription as it was intended and you're a murderer. The pharmacist complained to the police. They were both brought in, but nothing ever happened. So we've got a few deaths already, and this is 1881. 1881, he made his first big mistake. He had... Just to add to his credibility here, he had been creating and selling pills that he claims were a treatment for epilepsy. And they were pretty much just a mismatch of a bunch of stuff, including cocaine and strychnine. He claimed that these were a treatment for epilepsy. And because of the times, a lot of people bought into it. There was a local man. He didn't live in the city. He lived not far out of it. He was called Daniel Stott, and he had a wife who he would get to come into the city to pick up the pills from. He was 61, she was 33. He was, you know, on the older side and not doing particularly well. He was kind of incapacitated by his epilepsy. So she would go into town, and part of the arrangement was that she could spend the money that she wanted in the shops and have an overnight stay before she went back. Dr. Cream began an affair with Julia Stott. This went on for quite some time, and together they hatched a plan. He convinced her to get her husband to take out life insurance, and she asked him to very much increase the dose of strychnine that she was going to give her husband for one final time. So Julia goes back home, gives her husband these pills, and he died within minutes of taking them. The agreement was that Dr. Cream would get some of the insurance money, and presumably they would run off into the sunset together. Daniel Stott's death was attributed to an epileptic seizure, and it was not attributed to murder originally. However, Dr. Cream was not happy with this because he A, wanted the money from the insurance, and B, he'd actually intended on suing the chemists who'd made up the prescription on Julia's behalf, and he couldn't do that with the current cause of death.
Right.
So he sent a letter to the coroner's office accusing the chemists of killing Daniel, which they thought was a hoax. They just totally ignored it. But he then went to the district attorney and convinced the district attorney to exhume Stott's body. And they found enough strychnine in his stomach to kill anyone three times over. The suspicion fell on the doctor, and he was charged with murder in the second degree. He actually fled to Canada briefly, but he was arrested and returned to Belvedere.
He likes to run away, doesn't he?
Oh, he loves it. This happened. He just moves around. I mean, considering how difficult it is to move around the world at this point in time, it is quite remarkable how much this guy gets around.
Yeah, he just flees, doesn't he?
He does.
First sign of anything, and he's just off.
He's just a little worm, honestly. He's horrible. I just can't handle him. He just makes me so angry. He's just like a little, I don't know, I just don't get it.
Weasel?
He's spineless and he's awful. He's just terrible. I don't know why, but I don't like the surname Cream, no offence to anyone that's got it. It just kind of like...
It adds a bit of a comical spin to the story.
It does. It feels like he shouldn't be a real person, but unfortunately he is. And do you know what it's like? Do you know if you've ever had a friend that just constantly makes poor choices in their life and you keep hoping that they'll just get their shit together and they don't?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, great. Oh, you've got a great opportunity and you cocked it up. Great, cool, awesome. Yep, no shock. It's a bit like that. Can you imagine being his friend and you're like, oh, so you did what? Oh, you killed them. Oh, yeah, great decision. Great decision, Cream. Love it. Sorry, little rant there. I'm back on board.
I mean, he's really the cream of the crop.
Oh, God. I was waiting for that. I was waiting to say something about rise to the top or one of those. Oh, my God. Right. Okay. We're in the trial. Yeah.
The cat that got the cream. Sorry. Sorry, go on. Carry on.
Joanna, this is a serial killer.
I'm sorry.
You just take this seriously.
Sorry.
Okay. Thomas Cream was sent to Illinois State Penitentiary in Joliet for a whole of life term. What happened during the trial is really interesting. So there's a lot of letters that he sent to people. There's a lot of statements from around the trial and character witnesses and so on and so forth. Julia Stott turned state's evidence and told the court that he'd seduced her, that he'd come up with a plan to poison her husband and blackmail the drug company. He'd tampered with the pills and it was all his idea.
Well, I'll be honest, it's kind of karma that he would meet someone like himself.
Apparently she played the perfect grieving widow. She's very attractive. She just... fluttered her eyelashes and, oh my goodness, I just cannot believe this has happened. I'm so sad. I was totally taken in a trance by this handsome man and I cannot believe this has happened. All this kind of stuff. So this was kind of the beginning of a hatred for women. It turns out that prior to this, Dr. Cream had actually contracted syphilis through having unprotected sex with a sex worker at some point during his student years, and he suffered from horrendous migraines and lots of other physiological symptoms as well. So he's got that kind of hatred for sex workers and women generally. He doesn't want to settle down. He, you know, is forced to get married, flees the country, and then he has this fling with a married woman, which goes horribly for him.
Yeah.
So he's kind of hating women at this point. He's in Juliet in the prison for 10 years. He had his term reduced to 17 years and then he obtained an early parole for good behaviour. Sounds pretty horrific. He was doing a lot of manual labour. Apparently when he left, he was kind of half the weight that he went in, didn't have quite the same good looks that he had and was a bit dishevelled and a little bit broken.
Prison then would have been, not that it's like a walk in the park these days, but it probably would have been pretty brutal.
Yeah,
I imagine they would have got like lashings and all that kind of stuff. You know, would have been whipped cream.
Lashings of cream.
Lashings of cream. Sorry.
Oh God.
I'm sorry.
I can't handle
it. Couldn't resist.
It's too much. He's brought it on himself. He's a murderer. I don't care.
Yeah, for sure.
He was released, and his father had actually passed away while he was in prison and left him $16,000. So he hadn't written him out the will despite him being a murderer. So that's always nice. When Dot's Cream was released in 1891, he briefly went back to Canada, I think primarily to get the money from his father's estate.
Yeah.
And then he decided to go back to England, probably because nobody wanted him in Canada and nobody wanted him in America. So
yeah.
He's kind of narrowing down the places that he can work and
probably try to reinvent himself.
He did. So he actually took his middle name and he started going by Dr. Thomas Neal.
What a surprise.
I'm just going to keep calling him Dr. Cream because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So he went to London, and even though he had a lot of cash, he could have settled absolutely anywhere. He went to Lambeth Palace Road, which was in the middle of a red light district and was, by all accounts, a fairly seedy part of town. He once again decided to do illegal abortions.
Oh, for God's sake, this guy just never learns his bloody lesson, does he?
He really doesn't. And it seems that he had a vendetta against the local sex workers. On October the 13th, 1891, a 19-year-old, I'm just going to use the term that they used at the time, prostitute named Ellen Donworth died of strychnine poisoning. A week later, a 27-year-old named Matilda Clover, who was also a sex worker, died of what was believed to be alcoholism at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So there was nothing to link him to the deaths, but even though he's not been tied to them, he still tried to blackmail some prominent citizens concerning Ellen Donworth's death. So he's just inserting himself in these matters, even though nobody actually suspects him at the time. He's not even smart enough to keep his name out of it. He has to always try and like make money off it, or, you know, blackmail someone or dob someone else in, see if he can try and get money out of it. There's two other women who were also sex workers, Alice Marsh and Emma Shrivell, actually died on the same night. And once again, nobody tied him to it. The press, they were calling him the Lambeth poisoner, and everyone was looking out for him. So all of those women died of strychnine poisoning, and it seems that he persuaded them to take the poison, saying that he had pills that protect him from venereal disease due to their occupation. They might want to take these. This might help you, you know, keep your health.
Mm-hmm.
But that murder method also had the advantage because he could be quite far away from the scene of the crime by the time that they started to get really ill and convulse and be unable to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So the police had started to suspect that there was a serial killer. There was a vigorous investigation, but no one had really suspected him. There had been, for one of the women that passed away, when he tried to blackmail a couple of innocent doctors, he had been brought to the attention of the police a little bit. Remember the first lady that they thought had died of alcohol poisoning?
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to say that, no, she died of strychnine, and I believe that you did it and you need to give me money, or I'll tell the police and they'll exhume her and then they'll find out that you killed her.
Mm-hmm.
It's classic style. So when they looked into that, they actually did look into her death and the case was reopened. Kind of started keeping an eye on him. They weren't entirely sure. But then Dr. Cream, once again, super arrogant, he became friends with a detective, a former detective from New York called John Haynes. And he decided to have a chat about these killings. And Haynes, wouldn't you know it, was struck by how much the doctor knew about them. Dr. Cream even took Haynes on a tour of the place where the murders had been committed. So he was super suspicious, and he took his suspicions to Scotland Yard, and they did some surveillance of him, And when they looked at the Matilda Clover case, who was meant to die of alcohol poisoning, then he'd tried to blackmail people and bribe people. They put it all together and they arrested him. There were other sex workers who came forward who explained about the pills that he was giving to people, but he hadn't murdered them, clearly. And his past, using his other name in Canada and in Chicago, came to light. In October of that year, so this is 1892, he faced trial for the murder of Matilda Clover. After 5 days of testimony, it took the jury just 10 minutes to decide he was guilty. And he was sentenced to death by hanging. In passing the death sentence, Justice Hawkins told the prisoner that his willingness to murder was so diabolical in its character, fraught with so much cold-blooded cruelty, that it could be expiated only by your death. So he was hanged inside Newgate Jail on November the 15th, 1892. Now, this is the bit that makes him even more famous. So James Billington, the executioner who hanged Dr. Thomas Neil Crean, swore to the end of his life that just before the trap door moved under his feet, he said, "I am Jack."
It's funny, the whole time you were talking about it, I thought the time of these murders and the fact that it's linked to sex workers and it's in England, I thought that is so, so close to Jack the Ripper. And the fact this guy was a doctor, because obviously they suspected that Jack the Ripper had anatomical knowledge because of the disembowelments and, you know, the mutilations that he did. They knew that it was somebody that must have some kind of anatomical knowledge, and they suspected a doctor. And when the whole time you were talking about it, I thought, how crazy that they would have this serial killer, and then, like, such a short space of time later, Jack the Ripper would appear.
So there's various other things surrounding this theory. First of all, there's a doppelganger theory. You need to run with this a little bit, suspend your belief in reality. Okay. So Edward Marshall Hall, who was the English barrister who defended Crean at his final trial, he had defended Crean in a bigamy case, and Dr. Crean's defence was that he couldn't be guilty because at the time of the alleged bigamous union, he was in a prison in Sydney. And then inquiries revealed that there was indeed a Thomas Neil Crean under lock and key in Australia who looked identical to Dr. Crean. So there's a belief that there's two men who look identical or very, very similar to each other because, you know, at the point they're not going to be sending photographs around the globe. Mm-hmm. They were using each other's incarceration as, like, unbreakable alibis for the crimes that they committed. So when he was being hung, he said he falsely confessed, "I am Jack," so that his doppelganger, the actual Jack the Ripper, would no longer be hunted. But also, he was actually in jail in America when the Jack the Ripper crimes happened in 1888, supposedly. There's also belief that because of the large inheritance that he had, he managed to bribe his way out of the jail, and then they still recorded him as an inmate. They falsified the records.
And let's be honest, any of that could actually be true, because how easy was it to just change your name and assume a new identity back in that day? You're not talking about passports and identity cards in those days. Photographs, even if they were around, they were incredibly poor quality. You know, if there's any merit to that, that guy in Australia, he might not have been a doppelganger, or he might have just assumed that name so that they could use that as their each other's. I mean, all you needed in those days was papers, and they were easily falsified. So I quite believe that. You know, the whole time you were talking, I thought, it's very, very bizarre that around the same time you would have two prolific serial killers in England. I mean, serial killers, despite what programmes would have us believe, are not common. They're not common. And, you know, the fact that his victims were sex workers as well, which was the same as Jack the Ripper.
The method is incredibly different.
Yes, the method is very different.
If you have a look at the document I've just shared with you, there's a picture of him. I don't think he's such an unusual looking person that it wouldn't be hard to find someone that would look similar to him. There's also a book that I read that's solely focusing on Dr. Thomas Neil Cream, and it's called Prisoner 4374, and it's by A.J. Griffiths-Jones. I first read it a little while back. It's not a long book at all. I think it's a couple of hundred pages long, and it's about £3 on the Kindle store if you fancy reading it. And I do like it. The lady that's written it has done 10 years of research. There's a lot in there that isn't easily found online. Lots of little details about just more like anecdotal things that people said about him. And there's some kind of insinuation that someone he knew from the medical profession may or may not have been Jack the Ripper, because there was a sighting of Jack the Ripper wearing a horseshoe pin. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Thomas Neil Cream was known to have had a horseshoe pin. However, when he went back to Canada, he gave it to one of his friends who was in the medical profession. It's possible he knew Jack the Ripper if he wasn't Jack the Ripper. Yeah, it's just a really interesting theory. I also found it quite interesting that someone that knew him when he lived in London described him in the following way. Women were his preoccupation and his talk of them far from agreeable. He carried pornographic photographs, which he was ready to display. He was in the habit of taking pills, which he said were compounded of strychnine, morphia, cocaine, and of which effect he declared was aphrodisiac. In short, he was a degenerate of filthy habits and practices. Sums him up, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a perfect summary of the kind of person he was.
So yeah, that's the case of Dr. Thomas Neil Cream, aka the Lambeth Poisoner, the Scottish Canadian serial killer.
Interesting. I must admit, you know, as I've said before, I'm a massive Agatha Christie geek. Well, Poirot is the only Agatha Christie that I consume, but I'm a big fan of it, and I love the historical stuff. And you know, not that I want to minimise it in any way, but I feel it has less of a sort of hard hitting impact as more recent cases, the ones that involve children and you know, things like that, which they take their toll on us. They can be hard to research, hard to tell. And for two people that suffer from anxiety, then, you know, it's always going to have an impact on us when we tell these stories and research these cases, of course. So, you know, the older ones are, I guess there's just, you're just slightly more removed from them.
I think it's easier to view them as a fictional character.
Yes, and just sort of like a historical story.
I think my favourite part about him is just how he bolts all the time. He's just like, nah, I'm not dealing with this.
My favourite part's the name.
It's amazing. It's just glorious.
Yeah.
It's always these guys. They get all the ladies. How does he get all the ladies? Bizarre.
I don't know.
Utterly bizarre. I mean, perhaps some of it was to do with the fact that he had syphilis and it affected his brain, but I mean, really?
I don't know enough about syphilis to make a comment there.
So syphilis can invade the nervous system at any stage of infection and causes a wide range of symptoms, including headache, altered behaviour, difficulty coordinating muscle movements, paralysis, sensory deficits, and dementia. So there you go. That's only once it's invaded the nervous system. If you catch it before that,
yeah,
I believe it can be treated, but it can theoretically cause insanity.
Interesting.
But nowadays it's entirely curable.
We'll
so once it's gone into your nervous system, they call it neurosyphilis, and then it's infected the nervous system, the brain, the spinal cord, and it's life-threatening. And yeah, it can cause insanity and all sorts of horrific things. But I don't think that necessarily means you have to murder people.
Maybe no.
That's just me.
Yeah, I agree.
So there. Yeah. Do you have a fun non-syphilis related fact for me?
I do. Since we're on the subject of oldie worldy, I'm going to go with one of my old time facts because I'm a bit of a history geek and I love all this kind of shit. This week's fact is that King Henry VIII imposed a beard tax that every man must pay to wear facial hair. Designer beards, rugged manes and tickly tashes are all the rage nowadays. But in 1535, King Henry VIII made you pay for the luxury. He introduced a beard tax that lined his pockets and filled his dinner table. Moreover, the higher your social standing, the more you had to cough up. What if you cannot pay? Shave it away. Thus, beards became a symbol of status and money. So whenever you saw men gallivanting around like looking like a Tudor Jason Momoa, it's because they're loaded or broke after spending their last pennies on their beard. The tax didn't last long, but resurfaced with Elizabeth I, who taxed those with over 2 weeks' growth. However, to this day, it's disputed whether such a tax existed in England, but we'd love a good mystery. Other taxes included tax on windows, bricks, wallpaper, salt and candles to light one's home at night. It could be a myth, but I understand that there was a window tax back in the day, because I know that in Edinburgh there are loads of properties, older properties with bricked up windows, and you know you can tell that it used to be a window and it's been long since bricked up. So my understanding was that the reason that that had been done is because there was a window tax at the time. The more windows that your house had, the higher the tax you had to pay. And I'm fairly certain that that was the case. So there you go, beard tax.
There's a saying that comes from that. Daylight robbery.
Ah.
That's what daylight robbery comes from.
Right. Interesting.
There you go. That's it. That's where that comes from.
Yeah. I guess that the type of people that would have had properties that had loads of windows and letting loads of daylight, they would have been the cream of society.
Oh, God.
I had to get another one in.
Oh, Jesus. I should have known. I can't pick a case with a name that gives you anything to work with.
I know.
So yeah,
fantastic.
That was a good one. I enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, I do enjoy a historical case, I must admit. The Poirot geek in me enjoys it.
Thank you so much to everyone who has started following us on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. We've also had some super lovely reviews that really makes our day. We actually screenshot them and send them to each other. And it's just awesome because we like to know that you're enjoying what we're doing. And yeah, when people suggest cases to us, it's just really nice to have that interaction, because even though we luckily do have each other to sit and talk to when you're doing this, sometimes it does feel like it's just going out into the void. So yes. Yeah, to have people come back to us. Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty awesome. So please keep doing that. Please leave us your comments. Like we've always say, our email address is info@murdershespoke.net. So please get in contact, even if it's just some comments or if you've got a terrible joke that you want us to tell, something like that. We're always open to it.
Yeah, do you know what? Actually, I would like to open the floor, Emma, to some crime-related facts.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That would be good, because obviously we've said it before, case recommendations are always appreciated, because we would rather cover the more obscure cases, the ones that need a little bit of light shone on them. But also the facts would be great. If you know of something, you know, it's not strictly limited to Scotland. If you're we've got plenty of listeners in America, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Ireland. So if you have any case recommendations that you want to send us, and also if you have any crime-related facts for us that you want us to read out, go for it. Yeah, just send them to us.
We can also anonymise any true crime stories that you may or may not have witnessed or partaken in that are funny. Please don't send us admissions of murders. Also interested in weird laws that are kind of quirky legal loopholes that maybe your country has. So if you've got that kind of thing, that would be fun to listen to as well.
Definitely. And just, you know, as you were talking about, you were saying about the reviews, and we have had some wonderful reviews from people, which we appreciate so much, the ratings and reviews that everyone has given us, because it helps get us noticed, it helps get us out there, it helps spread our podcast. We're a small indie podcast. As you know, we're both from Scotland. Our crimes are primarily focused in and around Scotland, and we feel that we are a bit of a niche. So we do want to be a bit more well known. We want to get our name out there a bit. And, you know, I know that we have a couple of absolute fanboys, which I think we should probably give a shout out to.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Johnny and Darren, you know who you are. Yeah, I mean, Johnny and Darren, you've become two complete fanboys. We might have to send you some free merch. Keep the nice comments coming and we'll think about it. we've mentioned before that we have a few people that consistently give us lovely reviews, which is great. We just want to know that what we're doing is worthwhile, for sure. Keep recommending us and keep the reviews and the ratings coming, please, and help spread the word. Also, you know, I'm just putting out there again, hashtag bring back Crime Watch. I would be happy to present Crime Watch, you know, a reinvented version, and I'm sure Emma, you would love to be my co-host. And that's the thing, we've already got the good dynamic, you know, we've already got the interest, we'll do the research, you know, they don't even need to pay us, Emma. I'll do it for free.
We do have faces for podcasting, so there's that.
How dare you? But yeah, I'll do it for free. Just give me some airtime and I'll do it.
Come on, please. Whoever's out there, please, for the love of God.
I mean, BBC, you've got me listening. So if you want to get in touch with us, we are on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. Any of those platforms is absolutely fine, and you know our email address is info@murdershespoke.net. We'd love to hear from you.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.